bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, lots and lots of snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Six great flavors of slushies. Pickle bar, led by the personal favorites, the barrels and the dills. Indeed, second to none, all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And from steakhouse.com, Mike Poorman, always doing great work. Mike, welcome.
Well, you can't beat a place that roasts its own peanuts, right? Man, that's awesome.
Oh, no. They flat out get it done. You want a one-stop shopping for your tailgate, they get it done. No doubt. Okay, so they win 35-6 on Saturday night. And they scored touchdowns on every drive in the first half. Mike, what was your thoughts on the overall performance?
Well, thanks for asking, and I'll give you the answer that James Franklin deferred to on Saturday, and I think that half was, and you would know, you're better than me probably, but that half was the best half this season and maybe in a couple years. I mean, just complete football. And an incredible environment, right?
Yeah, let me ask you about that for a second. Awesome environment. Crowd was listed at 110, 223. But what was your thought? And you can't do anything about it now. You really couldn't do anything about it then. But the fact that he got put on Peacock instead of being on an over-the-air national broadcast.
Well, I got to tell you, I thought you were going to go this direction. I was surprised, and I'll get to your question in a second. I thought you were going to ask this one. I was surprised everyone showed up, everyone stayed, everyone was so invested in the game after, you know, a little bit of a hangover Ohio State and a couple quasi-wideouts, and you interact with students a ton. You know, some of them had said they're not sure they're into the wideout, but I was surprised how much of a, you know, on-brand whiteout that was and how much folks were into it. As far as Peacock, you know, you can't cash the checks without doing what they tell you to do. I guess that's my answer.
Well, no offense to Peacock, but Bowling Green and Kent State were made for Peacock, not this. See, and I think that's a bad judgment call by the Big Ten.
Well, you know, when you're signing contracts over $1 billion for TV coverage, they're not paying for what you want. They're paying for what they want.
Oh, I know. They're trying to drive subscriptions to Peacock. I got that part. Just like the Dolphins and the Chiefs playoff game last January was done to drive people to get subscriptions to Peacock. But, Mike, I've done this a long time. And in media, what are you trying to do in media? You're trying to get, quote, either as many eyeballs to read what you write, you're trying to get as many eyeballs to see what you're presenting. This doesn't do that.
Oh, absolutely. And this is a sidebar of it. So right before kickoff, I get a notice from Peacock that says that a user has signed into your Peacock subscription in New York, New York. I text my daughter, a 2019 Penn State grad. I go, "Are you using my Peacock subscription?" She emails back a little smiley face. Yeah, is that okay? So Peacock didn't get any money out of her either.
When you got Peacock, did you get it for the Olympics and didn't drop it?
But there was money for her and her boyfriend, who's a Penn State grad. They should have subscribed to it. But, you know, Peacock lost out on that one subscription. I'm sure they lost out of a lot of them that way, too, as well.
When you got Peacock, did you get it for the Olympics or did you just get it for the programming? Why did you get it?
No, as soon as I saw that, that's a great question. I'll be honest. As soon as I saw that some of the Big Ten games are going to be on Peacock. I had to get it, right? And that's what they're counting on. I guess that's the point. But, yes, if you're Penn State, you're disappointed. Absolutely.
Okay, so you have a quarterback now in Drew Aller that's made 22 starts in his career. What are you seeing now in a Drew Aller that maybe we did not see last year with his initial starts?
Well, that's a good question. Now, James had a great answer to that, the presser where you were at today, where he said that Drew looks comfortable almost all the time. And he does look comfortable. It looks like he's playing within himself but at a high speed. And when he takes off, and James kind of said at the beginning of the year, you saw this, I'm sure, from a lot of practices, he is more mobile than folks had expected. But I think that goes to his comfort level and his confidence. And I think probably those two things more than anything else. I'm not a super mechanics guy, but I think, you know, the intangibles, comfort level with the offense, with who he is, his decision-making, and then his confidence to pull it down, his confidence on when to thread it, his confidence to yell at guys on the sidelines. I love that stuff. I think those are the biggest differences in Drew Aller that we're seeing, and the team is responding.
It's a team that, from a year ago, ended up losing three NFL draft picks. In a fifth-round pick, a fourth-round pick, and Olu was a first-round pick. Yet the offensive line at least seems to be playing better. A, do you think they're playing better, and if so, why?
Yeah, you know, they do seem to be playing better. I think they're a little bit of the comfort level. I mean, Troutwine has – they've been with Troutwine their entire – most of them, not Nick Dawkins, so I think it's in year 17 at Penn State, although I love Nick. He's the epitome of student-athletes. But they're comfortable with Troutwine. And also, when you look at those losses, here's something no one else is talking about, but – your pal and mine, Landon Tangwell, he would be a senior right now. Mm-hmm. And he was starting as a sophomore. So they've absorbed that loss as well, which really makes it all interesting. So they've adjusted to that on the fly as well. I think Troutwine does not get enough of credit for that. And I think some credit, and I'm laughing because maybe even more than some, Frank Leonard is a hell of an analyst.
Yes, he is.
If there's one guy I love to watch coach and do warm-ups, it's Frank Leonard, man. As a football guy, he is so into it, and the kids respond. I think he and Trout are a good bad cop, good cop, loud guy, quiet guy. I think that's a really good combo there. And I think it does manifest itself to a degree in the offensive line play.
If you had to pick a guy that was the definition of the old school, just absorbed in football guy, it's Frank Leonard, who, by the way, always kids all the time. Well, he'll tell James, you know, we're just glorified gym teachers, right?
That is a great line, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, you know, I've heard him say it. But he's incredible that way. Tom Allen. A lot of focus will always be on an offense, and especially with the creativity we've seen from Andy and how they've executed. But they were going to go, and I don't know if I talked to you about this before or not, so if I have, Mike, please stop me. But for 8.5 months, they planned on playing a certain way. And then K.J. Winston got hurt. And they had to adjust and adapt. What does it say about Tom, the staff on defense, and the players that they have adapted the way they have? Because the style has had to be a little bit different than how they planned.
I think it's really astute. I think a storyline for the season that has, and I'll be guilty of it as well. I'm sure you and Jack talk about it a lot. But, I mean, the game that he had against West Virginia, mm-hmm. I mean, it was otherworldly. And so they had not only had to make up for it, but they don't have him. And, they would be phenomenal. And it's forced Jalen Reed, admittedly from him, he's even said this, to be much more of a vocal leader, to kind of fill that void in the room, but also in the game. And then, you know, two of the last three, he's made really, really great plays. So that's Jalen's filled the void. But it's kind of funny is that it's a major, major injury, and people have forgotten about it. Except you. You just brought it up.
You know, and Reed now has an interception each of the last three games, which is, you know, that tells you a lot about where he is right now. A young player like Zion Tracy, we saw the interception return for a touchdown against Ohio State. But then I go back to the USC game and how he's playing. What are we seeing from him right now, in your opinion, that has helped make that secondary better?
It's kind of that comfort level, but it's easier for someone like me to appreciate his speed and agility as a punt returner. Also translates whether it's at pick six or translates what he's able to do, turn on a dime in the secondary, really have that top level quickness. I think his ability as a, I don't want to say it's natural athlete, but some of those natural speed and quickness skills in combination have added a great deal back there.
Well, in fact, it's only my opinion, the single most impressive play he made in the game was a play that went nowhere. That was the line drive fair catch that he made as a punt returner, because that, to me, showed judgment that I can get to it and I don't need the ball hitting the ground. That showed me something in terms of him growing as a player back there.
Well, that's a great point. And also, Caden Saunders was not a returner when it comes to churning out big yards, but he was, as Franklin likes to say, he was a real steady Eddie. So there's another guy who's been lost, and they've gone on and no one has said, hey, Saunders, who's really a machine for fielding punts, is not back there. So it's really interesting. Probably Saunders' best skill was making that catch is the one that you point out that Tracy has stepped in and filled.
All right, so we're at the point of the season now where I think Max Granville still has to sit out one more game. There's a couple of other guys that are in that camp. Quentin Martin would have to sit out one more game. But a guy like Corey Smith, he can play the rest of the season if need be, as an example. Everybody finally got a chance to see Corey Smith carry the football on Saturday night in the fourth quarter. What were your thoughts watching that young man?
I thought he was going to score. I mean, it was crazy. You know, it's I got to tell you, I flashed ahead, and this could be it for this season for Singleton and Allen. And they're not missing a beat. I mean, that was a crazy good run. I know Franklin today applauded his first carry, not that one, but it was it was electric, and it was literally an explosive play.
Yeah, I want to get into the management, though, of how they've managed all this with the players that they really do want to redshirt. What does that tell you about the organization itself, that they're managing this in such a way where now the door is open where the full roster, if need be, is available to them in the waning weeks of the season?
No, I think that's a great point. And it's a really unheralded point. The ability to really, it's kind of a front office function, right?
Yeah.
When you're talking with people, with Andy Frank and those people, and you're bringing in the analysts, you're bringing in people maybe even like Will Ryman to go, to help strategize those things, what would be typical front office functions, I think Penn State has gotten really good about that. And the thing that no one talks about, but then you're also talking about, okay, you want them to have a taste of it. Are they going to? How much do they need to see action to stay, to not transfer, to not try the portal, to not be disgruntled, to not be a locker room problem? All those things go into it that you never really had to think about. In the past, it was like, no, you're a freshman. You're not playing my way or the highway. That's no longer the case.
Yeah, because now, I mean, they have the ability to play these guys even on special teams, which might give somebody's legs a break in terms of running downfield. Things like that that I think are important. I brought up in the offseason, and I'm really interested in your perspective, that when the expansions happened in the SEC, Texas, Oklahoma, and then in the Big Ten. That the coach, Steve Sarkisian and Brett Venables, their jobs got more difficult, and the other 14 teams in the SEC, their jobs got more difficult. In the Big Ten, everybody's job got more difficult on the West Coast, but everybody within the conference, their jobs got more difficult. How do you describe strength of schedule based on what the new teams have brought in and the fact that you have to play them compared to what you had before in division play?
Well, I hate to say it like this, but as Penn State's head coach loves to say, it's a combination of everything. And then you throw in a reduced roster and, you know, NIL, whether next year the money's, there's going to be $17 million extra that they have to generate to pay football players. And you throw in the travel, you throw in the portal. I mean, it's literally a different game. So it's not only, look, if Washington had been on the schedule last year, we might be having a different discussion now. But Washington eventually will cycle and be good again. And look where Indiana is. So and Minnesota, at Minnesota in 2 weeks, is going to be a challenge.
You're a good team.
Yeah, it's you're going to have to do the 1-0 mentality, because if you look ahead, man, you're going to get scared.
Mike, I think they need to revisit the 105. I know this is a completely off topic, but you brought it up, and I'm glad you brought it up. I don't mind if it's 105 with scholarships, but I think they have to give everybody a developmental program, which still allows walk-ons, and put a number on it, 15 guys, right, that just want to walk on and be a part of your practice squad or whatever. I think they've got to somehow revisit that in some way, and I don't know if they have the ability to do it or not.
Well, I think you're right, and my take is, your reasons are sound, and one or two of my reasons, honestly, walk-ons are great stories. Bring in the true student athletes. Walk-ons continue what big-time sports are all about. Walk-ons are Matt McCloyne, you know? I mean, there's myriad reasons to continue to have walk-ons and make sure that they're part of even the highest level of college sports. I think for all of those reasons. And I think eventually, you know, Carl Nassib was a walk-on, right?
Yeah. Yes,
so
he
you
was.
Have two walk-ons who are on the board of trustees. I think that's kind of cool, too.
Right. No, exactly. But I just, in order to properly run a football practice, you need 120 players. And that's something I think... I remember when somebody was complaining, I think it was actually Rainey Portland was complaining about the number of scholarships football had. You know, and she wasn't saying, she wasn't saying anything about, the number. But there was a complaint about it. It was like, you actually need 120 guys to have a proper football practice. And I think there has to be some understanding somewhere, Mike, from people who do the job for a living to tell it. The people in Indianapolis who administer these ideas, that there's a right way and a wrong way to do it, and capping it at 105 is not the right way.
Well, this is interesting you invoked Rainey's name, because, you know, even the women's basketball team, they still have, and I have one of them in class, he's a fabulous student, one of them, they still have male practice players for any number of reasons, but that's also, you, especially basketball, right? You're a basketball guy, too. You need those practice players.
Right. That's just the way it is. Mike, really enjoyed it. I know we covered a wide range of topics here today, but we can do that because you can answer a wide range of anything. So I appreciate you very much.
Well, thanks, buddy. It's always great to talk to you, Steve.
Mike Borman. StateCollege.com. Great to talk with him on the show today. And this half hour is brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. The beverage supermarket imports domestics microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. It's time to start thinking about stocking up for the holidays. You believe we're talking about that already? We're talking about stocking up for the holidays. How about that?
I think you need to buy some Beat Writer gift cards the way they like this Brewers Outlet ad.
They love it. And because if they go to Brewers Outlet, they're going to love it even more. All right? Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts, freshen out every day. 6 great flavors of slushies. Pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills. My 2 personal favorites. Indeed, second to none as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
President Biden making it clear in that meeting that he intends to do everything that he can to help the incoming president.
Senator John Thune has just been elected Republican leader, the first in 18 years, succeeding Mitch McConnell. Administration officials say Biden will meet with China's president in Peru on Saturday and express concerns about its support for Russia's war in Ukraine. Secretary of State Blinken said today the administration is getting as much assistance to Ukraine as possible.
We're making sure that Ukraine has the air defenses it needs, the artillery it needs, that has the armored vehicles it needs.
CBS News has learned Special Counsel Jack Smith plans to wrap up his investigations against Donald Trump and resign. Trump has said he would fire Smith 2 seconds after being sworn in. CBS News Brief, I'm Cammie McCormick.
There are tangible ways you can give back to veterans who have given so much to our country. Consider volunteering your time or talents to veterans organizations or healthcare facilities helping service members. You can also support veteran-owned businesses in your community or simply visit a veteran you know.
An in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour being brought to you by our great friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. They go over each vehicle with a fine-tooth comb. That way it makes the buying experience so much easier and better. Terrific service department, whether it's quick lane, inspections, routine, easy. They handle it all, and difficult. They handle it all at Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf and online at sunburymotors.com. Trying to bring in one of my favorite people, the play-by-play voice of Purdue football, Tim Newton. Tim, how have you been?
Steve, I've been better. But you know, we're still hanging in here.
Yeah, I understand that. It's not easy to broadcast a tough season. There's no question about that. When you look at Ryan Walters and what he's trying to do, where is the program now? Because, I mean, he walked into some tough circumstances with Jeff Brohm leaving. Has he been able to improve certain segments of the program along the way, especially with the younger players?
Yeah, I do think I would say, Steve, they had some success in the portal, although I think that success may be a little bit delayed. You know, a lot of the programs that are using the portal are using it as a one-year stopgap, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, our neighbors down to the south have parlayed that basically into a top-5 program this year. What Ryan has tried to do is he's tried to go a little bit younger when he's gone into the portal, so instead of getting a one-and-done guy, he's got guys with 2 and sometimes 3 years of eligibility. And so even though those guys have maybe played somewhere or at least have been at other programs, they're still pretty inexperienced, and we're starting to see some of these guys that are a little bit younger get a little bit better as the season goes on. But, you know, the numbers are the numbers, and as the great philosopher Bill Parcells said, you are what your record says you are, and Purdue's a 1-8 football team, and they're, you know, dead last in a lot of different categories, both offensively and defensively. So while there has been some improvement, there is a long, long, long way to go to get this program back to being respectable.
What makes Maccabee a quality running back, though, Tim?
Steve, I've called him unhinged, and I don't mean that as a negative. When he runs, it looks like his arms and legs are going in all different directions. But he's so elusive. You very rarely see him taken down on the first hit.
He'll give you a hip and then take it away, and he's able to do his 360 spins, and he leaps over guys even though he's not a big guy. He's just very, very – he's elusive. I think that's probably the best way to describe him. Although he is capable, we've seen him also run over a couple of guys, but he's fun to watch. Yeah, he's been one of the bright lights of this season. I think every time he gets the ball, you kind of hold your breath a little bit because you don't know what you're going to see on that particular play.
The quarterback play, Hudson Carr transfers in from Texas, and then there's Ryan Brown. They're different types of players. How would you describe how Card has played to this point? How would you describe how the team has played when Brown has been in there?
Well, you know, Hudson Card has been, I think he's been on a roller coaster this season. He started the year with the opener against Indiana State. Now, take in mind, Indiana State, not a very good program, or at least not at Big Ten level. He goes 24 for 25 in that game, sets a single-game Purdue record, and looked like he was gonna win the Heisman Trophy that day. Then the next game against Notre Dame, he has a hard time getting a pass down the field, and he's under pressure all day. And I don't think his receivers have helped him very much this year. I think Purdue's receiving core in general has been very disappointing, and I think that's been a factor why Hudson has not put up bigger numbers than he's gotten. We've seen a lot of plays where he's able to keep a play alive by scrambling in the pocket, and you look down the field and his receivers are just staring back at him. They have not done a good job of finishing plays and coming back to the ball and doing those kinds of things. He has not run the ball very much. I think they would like him to run it a little bit more. He suffered an injury last year, and I think he may have come into the season a little bit gun-shy. But he's a tough kid. We saw him a couple of weeks ago against Northwestern get hit underneath the chin and split his chin open, and they just brought him over, bandaged him up, and put him back out on the field. Ryan Brown's a little bit different. Not quite the passer that Hudson Card is, probably a little bit better runner than Hudson is. Ryan's a freshman, but he's 21 years old. He had gone to a prep school, and so he's and he redshirted last year as a true freshman. So he's got some experience to him, but I think you have to put an asterisk by the quarterback play this year because really they haven't had a whole lot of help from the receivers, and the offensive line has not protected as well as we would have thought they would do this year.
Yeah, I think we're going to see two of the better tight ends in the conference. Now, look, you know, this will be because I see him every day. I think Tyler Warren's the best tight end in the country, personal opinion. But Max looks like he's played really well for you guys at tight end.
He might be Purdue's best player. Max Clair has done a great job this year.
Yep.
He gets open. Now, obviously, he is because the receivers have struggled this year to get open. Max gets a lot of attention. He's double covered and sometimes triple covered.
Yeah.
But he's really been a great relief valve, a good reliable guy that you can throw the ball to on third down. And I would assume, we're in an era, Steve, when your players are your players for that season, but who knows after that. I can tell you I believe he's drawing interest from other programs. I'll just put it that way. And I think Purdue would be very fortunate if they can keep Max here for another couple of years because I think he's certainly got the ability to play on Sundays.
Yeah, that's when I look at the tape, that's what I see. I think I see a guy that can play on Sundays. Is Ryan calling the offensive plays?
Yes. That started,
okay. Yeah, I
gotta think, they fired Graham Harrell after game four. And then there was one game where Ryan did not call the plays because he didn't have all the necessary terminology that you needed to call it that first week. But since then, he has been calling the plays. Yeah, he has basically handed the defense over to Kevin Kane's defensive coordinator, and Ryan is calling the plays from the field every Saturday.
Because Ryan, we all know it's a defensive background. He'd been the defensive coordinator at Illinois. Now, you have to scheme for offenses. I understand that. How surprised was everybody there that he'd be the play caller based on his background?
Well, yeah, you're right. Surprising is the word. Ryan's trying to be a troubleshooter here. He's trying to fix the problems that Purdue has, and he said afterward, I thought the best opportunity for us to get the offense going in the right direction was if I called the plays, because I know as a defensive coordinator what causes me problems, and I think I have a pretty good pulse of what makes our offense tick, so I'm just going to go ahead and do that myself. Now, part of the other equation there, Steve, is that there really wasn't anybody else on the offensive staff that had play calling experience before.
Right.
It wasn't a guy that maybe you had another offensive coordinator that was in waiting or whatever. So a part of this was and frankly, you know, the offense under Graham was just a mess. Let's be honest about it. It was, I've said before, you can be vanilla in your offense, but you can be Haagen-Dazs vanilla, or you can be grocery store variety vanilla, and Purdue was more of the latter. Just wasn't very imaginative the first four games this year, and Ryan decided it was time to make a change, and I do think Purdue's gotten a little bit more creative with what they're doing in terms of personnel groupings, and they've run some more trick plays, but a long way to go to be competitive against a really, really tough schedule.
Both teams do have a safety that leads their team in tackles. Now, but Jalen Reed plays so often near the line of scrimmage, it makes no more sense. For you, though, Dylan's really a terrific player. What makes him special at that safety spot?
I think he's got great vision. His two older brothers played football here, both came here as walk-ons. And so he's been in a football family his entire life, and he understands what it takes. And I think he's probably been watching game film since he was a little kid. But he really understands the game, and I think he anticipates very well. Now, I will say, Steve, I don't think he's played as well this year as he did last year. I thought he was phenomenal as a freshman. He's been good this year, but I would say, I don't know, if maybe taking a little bit of a step back, but we're seeing him miss a lot more tackles, being out of position a little bit more than we would expect Dylan to be. And again, that's just an endemic of a defense that's right now ranked 18th in the conference in a lot of categories. He's had to try to cover a lot of holes, and I think sometimes Dylan tries to do too much. And it's understandable, but again, I don't think he's had quite the season he had as a true freshman.
So is it just an issue at all three levels, where he has to attempt to cover up for somebody else's mistake or out of position? Is it a three-level thing, or is it more one level that's hurting more than others?
Well, I think if you were to look at the position on the team that's probably the weakest, it's the linebacker spot. And you all know at Penn State, linebackers are pretty important. You know, they're pretty key to your defense. And frankly, Purdue's linebacker play has been really poor this year. The defensive line has held up in some games, although the one thing that Purdue's had a really difficult time doing all season long is setting the edge. We see team after team able to turn the corner, whether it's on a jet sweep or a misdirection play, or the one that's really hurt them is a running back or tight end coming out of the backfield and going against the grain. But again, the linebacker play has just really been subpar. And I think Dylan, again, has tried to move around the field. They've moved him. And last year, every play, he was like 25 or 30 yards off the line of scrimmage. Now you'll see him move around more defensively, where sometimes you'll see him up in the slot covering somebody, or you'll see him closer to the line of scrimmage. And they're just trying to get him a little bit closer to the action to, again, try to correct some of the deficiencies this defense has.
Yet there have been some games, Northwestern, right there, Illinois, right there. What happened in those games where Purdue was right there, even though they couldn't quite get over the hump?
Well, there were kind of a tale of two games, and you're right. I mean, instead of 1-7, you win those two overtime games, you're 3-5, and even though that's not a great season, it's a whole lot different than 1-7. I guess we're 1-8 now. 1-8. They all blend together after a while.
I understand.
You know, you go back to those two games, the Illinois game, Purdue's down 27-3 early in the third quarter and just looks horrible. And all of a sudden, Ryan Brown, who was playing that day because Card was out with a concussion, something clicked. And somehow an offense that barely has been able to get out of its way for a lot of the season scores 40 points in one half.
Yeah.
Actually took a 43-40 lead with less than a minute to play, although as we remarked at the time, I think they left 40 or 50 seconds. I said, that's too much time. And sure enough, Illinois came down, kicked a field goal to tie the game. They scored in overtime, kicked the point, and then when Purdue scored its overtime touchdown, they decided to go for two and didn't make it. So that was a wild shootout, but the offense in that last 30 minutes of that game was phenomenal. The Northwestern game, Purdue again got off to a slow start, which has really been one of the big problems. Purdue's only scored 10 points in the first quarter of all nine games combined, and seven of those came in the season opener against Indiana State. But Purdue gets down 17-3 to Northwestern, battles back, ties the game. They've got the ball with 2 minutes left for a chance to go down and have a game-winning drive and take a sack on first down and never really got on track. Then they go on offense first in overtime and don't score. Ryan decides not to try a field goal on fourth and six because right now they don't have a whole lot of confidence in their freshman kicker. And Northwestern made a stop, and then two plays later they're in the end zone and celebrating. So kind of different games, but both games that Purdue certainly could have won, and you walked out of it thinking probably should have won. But, again, they just couldn't finish down the stretch.
How the fans reacted? Because the last time out, now for basketball, it's always everybody's, you know, you need a shoehorn to get everybody into Mackey. Last time I was there was the blackout game on opening night where I thought Purdue played a terrific game and then Penn State was able to win at the end. The crowd was awesome that night. How the fans reacted to this?
Honestly, that has been the biggest surprise, and I would say the biggest positive surprise of this season. The fans have been unbelievable. Purdue has six home games this year. We've sold three of the six out, came very close on the other two. And the last time I checked, we only have something like 2,000 tickets left for Saturday's game. And they have really shown out. I mean, sometimes you wonder if you get those games in November if the fans are actually going to come. But that Northwestern game that we played here a couple of weeks ago, you might have had five or six rows in the student section that were still unfilled. But the rest of the stadium was packed. And it really has been amazing. I think part of that is there's still a little bit of a leftover effect from not being able to see football during the COVID season. You know, there was a lot of pent-up demand for people to get out, and we've kind of ridden those coattails for a while. I think the other thing that you mentioned, the basketball team, I think there's a lot of glow that still emanates from the basketball program, and people are excited about Purdue sports, and they want to see the football team succeed. Even though they've been disappointed in their trips to Ross-Ade this year, they're still coming out, and I'll be curious to see on Saturday. Again, we've got a lot of tickets sold, but we'll see how many people actually show up and how many are wearing black and gold and how many are wearing blue and white.
What kind of improvements? Last time I was there was for basketball last winter, and it looked to me like there were some certain things at Ross-Ade that looked like they did a lot. They did some work on it. What's improved there for the fans?
Yeah, you'll see a whole different thing than you saw the last time because they've closed in the south end zone, which used to be, we used to call it the party deck, but it was basically just an open area. They've closed it off, and that's actually where the students are now. The students are in that end zone and then wrapping around on the east side of the stadium up to about the 20 or 30-yard line. And the students stand in the south end zone. I'm glad I'm not a student anymore because I don't think I could stand three or four hours at this point. But So that has closed everything off, and it gives the stadium a little bit different feel. They've got the huge scoreboard, which I think was there the last time that you guys were here.
It was.
If I remember right.
Yes.
But I think that change in the south end zone has kind of changed the dynamic of the stadium. And even though Purdue only seats 60 or 61,000, it gets pretty loud in there. And as you saw on that nighttime game that we had, which was a great game coming right down to the stretch. It can get loud. I don't know, again, how loud it'll be on Saturday, but it's been a great home field advantage this year, and surprisingly as it is with Purdue struggling on the field.
How have the fans treated Ryan Walters to this point?
Well, I think the worm has turned a little bit. I think they were very supportive in year one, but I don't think anybody bargained for a 1-8 team. And there were chants during the one of the last basketball games that you could hear the audible "Fire Walters" chants, which is really, I think, unfortunate, especially when that emanates from your student section. I think people are losing their patience a little bit right now, and I think it's going to be an interesting off season. There's a lot of speculation about what the athletic director is going to do here. Mike Bobinski's. You know, I'm sure he's had a lot of meetings with Ryan about what to do going forward. And, assuming that Ryan is back for year three, I think there will be a lot of staff changes and the understanding that you can't continue to do things the way that we're doing it now because whatever it is, it's not working. So I think the patience, at least the external patience, is wearing thin. Now, how things are being received in the athletic department, we're not in the habit of eating a lot of coaching money here, especially when you've got a lot of money coming up with the house settlement that you're going to have to be paying your student athletes. But it's going to be an I think it's going to be an interesting offseason, and I think there will be a lot of changes one way or another. I don't think they'll come in with the same staff and the same roster in 2025 that they've got in 2024.
What's the viewpoint of Penn State coming into town based on people you've talked with?
Well, it's Penn State. I mean, Penn State's really good. You know, your only loss is to Ohio State, which there's no shame in that. You know, there is the perception, and I'm sure you've heard it, Steve, that, you know, Penn State is really good, but not good enough to be the top team or second best team in the conference. And I think until you can win the games like the Ohio State game, that perception, at least externally, at least in our area, is going to stay the same. But having said all that, Penn State's really good, and we know that this, you start going down that roster, and that's a really good football team that's coming in here Saturday. So I think people understand, you know, that we're four touchdown underdogs this week, and it's not the worst we've been, but it's I think that line is probably a pretty fair line, and you know, Purdue's going to have to do something to try to change perception here the last three games of the season.
Tim, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time today. Can't wait to see you on Saturday, my friend.
We're going to have a beautiful day for you, Steve. I think the weather looks like it's going to be great. And so hopefully we'll have a nice fall day to celebrate.
Absolutely. Tim, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
The outstanding Tim Newton, the play-by-play voice of Purdue football. Great to have him with us on the show today. That's one thing we've had. Talked about weather. Starting with the, I don't know, the Illinois game. Every single game, the weather has been spectacular, whether it's here or on the road. It's been incredible. This half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Hyundai is going to make this a November to remember. Sunbury Motors Hyundai received 10 truckloads of new Hyundais, and we need to make room now. Choose from over 55 brand new Hyundai Tucson's with savings over $6,500. Sunbury Motors has the full-size SUV Hyundai Santa Fe discounted up to an unbelievable $6,197 off. Both the Tucson and Santa Fe have financing as low as 0% for 48 months and 1.99% for 60 months. Remember, all new Hyundais come with America's best warranty, 10 years, 100,000 mile powertrain. If you want to have a fun day, why not buy a Santa Cruz Hyundai? This nimble pickup starts at $31,340. The Santa Cruz is discounted up to $49,50 with 23 available. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza is going to save you the most money all year now. 10 truckloads of new Hyundais will make this month a November to remember with your next Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai.